Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospective's look at the Incredible Hulk series.
How long has it been since you felt real pain?
Part of Percolated Media's full Marvel podcast series.
It's a wonderful plan, isn't it?
Join Matt.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Adam.
You look like a massive nerd, even around other scientists.
And Garrett.
The third was some giant, if I can believe the descriptions.
As they look at various film iterations of the Incredible Hulk character.
I hate them.
Wait, I just got here. Who do we hate?
From Bill Bixby to Eric Bana.
You could always close out the world when you wanted to.
The three co-hosts will review 4 Hulk TV movies, as well as the 2003 Ang Lee-directed film.
No one can take that kind of punishment.
So prepare to Hulk yourselves out, podcast listeners. The Percolated Media Incredible Hulk Retrospective begins now.
In each of us, there lives a kind of beast made of rage. Years ago, I used science to study this beast, to bring him out of me. I used gamma radiation to release him, but I used too much.
The Incredible Hulk returns. Not to be confused with The Return of the Incredible Hulk, which is a different but somewhat related title. This thing aired on May 22nd, 1988. Budget TBD. This was directed by Nicholas Correa. All right, Garrett, I'm putting you on trial right now. I'm not waiting till next week.
Next week is the trial.
I know, but this show was off the air for 6 years, concluded in 82. So why did they bring it back?
One reason, and one reason only. Bill Bixby. He was done with the series when they retired it, but he tried a couple other things. It didn't work. So he's the one who brought this back. In fact, you're going to find this interesting, Matt. He tried to get Spider-Man, that whole pilot and that character, into this, and he was going to do whole crossovers based on that. That didn't work out. So when that didn't work out, they couldn't get rights squared away. They went to this Thor character, and this was what they came out with in return. And yeah, he was going to do a whole crossover universe. Next week's movie, we're going to bring another one in. This was a whole project idea of Bill Bixby. Was it for a paycheck? Probably, but I got to tell you, I was there right when this aired, man. I was so excited for this. I plopped in front of my TV saying, I haven't seen The Incredible Hulk in so long. I am excited to see him return. So yeah, it was made for me. I was excited to see The Incredible Hulk on TV once again.
Now, there is a bit of symmetry that we should talk about, because the last time we were in the world of Marvel, we talked about the Punisher. And it was around this time that this movie and the two after this were produced by New World Television, which was the subgroup of the Roger Corbin company that produced the Dolph Lundgren movie and several other Marvel properties that they had acquired. So there is a world where we could have seen this Lou Ferrigno fight Dolph Lundgren, but thank God that didn't happen. Now, I thought Bill Bixby directed this one because I knew he directed the previous two, but he did not. This was Nicholas Correa, who worked on a lot of episodes of the show. So Bill Bixby felt comfortable putting him in this role. I know him because he did some Star Trek, mostly Deep Space Nine and Voyager. So prominent TV director, all things considered. But it's a strange thing that we have to look at, because while Garrett may have cared, I find it hard to believe that people were necessarily excited for this coming back. Maybe I'm just an asshole, but we were a year away from Batman, and I think people cared much more about that.
Yeah, but that was still in development at this time. That was not released yet. That was a year away from being done. We'll talk about that next week. But at this point, this was my superhero. This and Superman. These were my two superheroes. And Spider-Man, which had hit TV, but less talked about that, the better. Yeah, this was the one that I was looking forward to until that Batman movie came out the next year.
Now, Kenneth Johnson, people wonder, why wasn't he involved in this? Well, he was under contract for a movie called Short Circuit 2. and he could not get out of it because that movie was apparently so important to whatever studio made it. Is that the one that takes place in New York?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, the number two should have given it away because the precursor to Home Alone, apparently. But Johnson was quote-unquote surprised when he found out about this, and he revealed that he had never seen it, and he never talked about it with Bixby, even until he died.
Interesting.
About it. All right, let's address the elephant in the room slash the pick up the hammer. This is also technically the first live-action debut of Thor.
Well, not necessarily, right, Adam?
I mean, for those of us that are of a certain age and have watched...
Oh, for Christ's sake, I know where this is.
It was 1 year earlier.
Adventures in Babysitting. Yes. We had another Marvel actor who doing double duty, Vincent D'Onofrio playing Thor.
Yes. And it should be said too, Matt, you can make fun of this all you want. This was a huge rating success. This thing was a massive success when it was done. That's why we get two more of these after it's done. So people were starved for it.
So I've never seen this until this viewing. I have seen Trial because I cared about Daredevil and Kingpin as a comic book fan and a media fan much more than I've ever cared about Thor. If you think I'm indifferent to the Hulk, I have never given a shit about Thor. Even though I've read the Walt Simonson stuff in retrospect, it's great. But that's the only instance in comics where I have given any thought about Thor. Adam, are you in my Norse Viking boat, or are you much more of a Thor fan?
No, I will absolutely fill my cup of mead and agree with you. I don't care about Thor. I've never cared about Thor other than Jane Thor. Like Jane Foster and that run is the only time I gave a shit about Thor. So, and I didn't know that this existed. I didn't know that this was a thing. I didn't know the rest of these existed. So we'll see how it is. But Thor, it's funny that Avengers made a big deal about Thor and Hulk facing off, because that's what this is. Yep. It seems to be, you know, that thing that you do with those two guys. Thor's one, if you bring him in to get certain people excited, I'm not the guy you're hoping to get excited.
You know, and ironically, I feel about Thor the same way in almost every instance that I feel about the Hulk, where I like him as a supporting character, but I never rush out to get something where he's the lead. But the exceptions are, you know, Peter David for the Hulk, and like I said, Walt Simonson with Thor, which we'll get into in Dark World. I did read Lady Thor. I think that was that Jason Aaron?
Yes.
But would you like to have seen this with Spider-Man instead, since you opened up that can of worms?
Well, considering, look, Lou Ferrigno is a very big man, but there were other aspects to Hulk that they were unable to do on TV, such as making him grow bigger as he got angrier, as I talked about last week. I can only imagine what those spider webs and that spinning of webs would have looked like if he had been amongst this universe as well. No, we're not going to review those movies for this retrospective. I don't think they're viable to the overall Marvel universe as a whole. But I remember watching them and just being completely disgusted with what they did. And by the way, Stan Lee completely agrees with that. And at this point, it should be said also that Spider-Man, the film, was actually being developed by James Cameron. Of all people, maybe a little later, right around.
That wasn't until the mid. Yeah. I mean,
early 90s. He was working on it in 91, because I remember Stan Lee in an interview saying that, yeah, James Cameron's working on it. No, not around this time. They didn't know how to handle Spider-Man, except in comics and book and records that I was reading and listening to at this point.
You didn't like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends?
Well, in cartoons, yeah. Okay. But I'm talking about live action.
So, Adam, would you have cared, like, if you swap out Thor for Spider-Man in this, would you care more?
You were able to do it, yes. Knowing how they did Spider-Man and knowing what those early Spider-Man TV movies were like, not really. But I would actually, and come to think about it, I would love to see teenage Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and the Hulk, and just deal with that dichotomy of those two different heroes dealing with things a different way. I think it's actually... Shoot, I should pitch this. I think that's actually a great idea for a book.
Hell, I think
a series or a movie.
Hell, I think they do get Peter Parker in this. Donald Blake is a fucking Peter Parker, whether they want to admit it or not.
Well, we'll get into that, because if you are a Thor fan watching this movie, you were probably as angry as Adam was when it was revealed the Joker shot Batman's parents.
I actually... I was going to save this for the actual review, but I think the Thor in this is pretty awesome. I love him in this.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have our own fight. So I got to ask this question also, because Adam and I have no reference with the show. How does the show end? Is it abrupt because it got canceled?
It was abrupt. Okay. It was completely abrupt. Yeah, it was canceled and there was no end. Once again, he was marching off to the Lonely Man theme without any context given to it whatsoever. And again, that's another reason why Bixby came back to it is, yeah, it ended very abruptly and he wanted to make sure that it ended well.
Okay, so there was at least the door to pursue.
Yes.
Like, this isn't a retcon or anything like
that. No, it was once again him solving nothing that has to do with the overall arc of The Incredible Hulk and him just walking away to the Lonely Man theme.
Well, clearly this did well because they got two more movies made.
Yep.
And they wanted an ending. I guess one of them's called Death, so we'll see if he actually dies or if it's a figurative thing because I've never seen it. So let's get into this, although I don't think this plot summary is going to take all that long. Because, you know, if you thought Batman versus Superman had a stupid plot, holy shit.
Just wait.
So, because it's been years, and Garrett, you can attest to this. So, we're reintroduced to Banner. He's seemingly doing okay, because he's working at the Institute. He's got a team of scientists working with him. He's got a girlfriend, and he hasn't been the Hulk for 2 years. So, clearly he's doing well, all things considered.
And he's David Banyan in this. Once again, changing that name.
So, as I mentioned, he's certainly in a better place than he was when we left him in the pilot. And he's working with his team on what's called a gamma transponder, which, because it's a comic book, it's like The Dark Knight Rises, where it's an energy source, but it's got a secret meaning because he wants to use this to, like, cure himself, which even the tie-in game for the Hulk, the Ang Lee movie, used this as the crux to get the story going.
Did it really?
Yeah, he tries to cure himself with a gamma bomb and it gets transferred to Ravage.
This was commonplace in that TV series. David Banner was always looking for ways to cure himself. In every season, at least twice, we see him go somewhere and find a way to actually try to cure himself. And of course, it never works. And nobody wanted it to work except for the David Banner character. And here's my problem with this movie. And yeah, I'm the fan of the character, but I have a pretty big issue with this movie. And by the way, when Steven Spielberg wasn't calling CBS TV yelling because they were using scenes from Duel in episodes, I don't know if you've heard that story, Matt. Have you heard that story?
No, I have not.
Yeah, so Steven Spielberg was home one day and he was sitting at his TV and he was going over something that he was working on. And he looks up and he's watching the Incredible Hulk TV show. And there was an episode that was literally Duel. They took scenes from Duel. And in the episode, Banner is driving away from a truck in a red car. And they take the exact scenes from Duel and use it in the series. And Steven Spielberg himself called CBS TV and was like, dude, this is bullshit. If you don't pull these, I am going to withdraw my contract from Universal, which we talked about when we did the Jaws series as well. He's done that a couple times. And so they ended up not doing that again. And Spielberg, after that, he actually worked hard to make sure that his stuff wasn't used without his permission. So, yeah, that's that story. But my issue with this series, and with this movie, actually, is there's no difference between this character from when we saw him 6 years ago to when we see him now. He's still the morose, droopy guy who is trying to find the cure for this huge thing that comes out of him when he's angry. There is no growth with this character. And if anyone knows TV, you make it episodic for a reason. You make it episodic so that it goes through a growth. This character has gotten no growth done, and he is still the same exact character. And that's frustrating to me. Yeah, he's got a girlfriend now. He's got a girlfriend named Maggie Shaw. You could tell he's in love, blah, blah, blah. But we've seen that before. Where's the growth? That's my issue.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't he get a new love interest like every other episode?
Oh, yeah. He's a poonhound in that show, for sure. But again, there's just nothing different about this character, and that pisses me off.
This thing starts, and it's been 6 years since the show went off the air, and I'm like, I get you got to reintroduce people, but I feel like I'm watching the beginning of what I watched before. He seems to be in the same place. He's in a building doing sciencey stuff, and the science stuff still looks like it's 1977, and he's got a girl with him, and I just don't feel like any time has moved.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like the status quo has not really changed. And when you're making dramatic anything, dramatic storytelling, I need some kind of plight. And one of the problems I have, he's looking for a cure, but he hasn't been the Hulk for 2 years. So clearly he's doing okay holding it in.
Yeah, until this fucking Viking character comes into his life. If it wasn't for this Donald Blake, would he have been contained forever? Who knows? But yeah, that's the problem, is that it's been inside for 2 years and he's had no incidents.
Now, and they do that a lot. Like, that's the whole crux of the Avengers. But yeah, it's for the lonely man, he seems to be doing pretty well. And I found this very off-putting. But God, all the scenes with him and Maggie, he is the most awkward lover I have ever seen. How does this guy get laid so much?
They are awkward.
He's not like Roger Moore, where you believe him as a womanizer or like charming in the way of like the way Peter Parker can be. I don't get anything from Bixby as the Hulk. And I know he's deeply associated with Banner because he's not playing the Hulk. But I don't get why he's so... Maybe it's because of longevity, but for me, it's not because of performance.
Yeah, he's a sap. And that's a problem, especially with this character.
Like, that's also the problem I have a lot with the Hulk, is that sometimes they make Banner too much of a blank slate that I want him to be the Hulk because he's so boring. But look, this movie's not boring because we're introduced to a former student of his, Donald Blake, and we get the Thor canon fans with pitchforks and torches, because we find out Blake was on an expedition in Norway. At least they got the geography right. It's not like he went to Egypt, which would have been the funniest thing. And he finds the hammer, which has Thor's like soul in it. And that's how... So Thor is back now, and he can be summoned by speaking Odin's name. So as far as like canon to Thor's backstory, this is big departure, especially because if you know Thor, Donald Blake is an alias he uses. Like they inhabit the same body.
This bugged me because I know that part of it enough. I know enough to be that annoying son of a bitch, as Garrett's known for 30 years. And so when they introduced Donald Blake, I think this is Thor, because I know that's the alias. And then this weird, I guess CBS had documentary footage on hand that they used to show him climbing into the freaking mountains, because suddenly it cuts to like just news footage and he finds a hammer in a cave. This is weird shit.
Yeah, and the reason why they did it this way is because they already have a character who can change into a bigger being by the end. And you're thinking TV budgets. You know, I know we don't have the budget for this, but you're not going to have two people be able to transform into these characters throughout the course of this. So they had to come up with an alternative, and this is what they came up with.
Well, that's also weird because they do the thing where, like, it's kind of like a split person. Like, they're connected.
Yeah.
In the same way that Banner and Hulk are. The difference is they're two separate beings. So it's weird that they have a through line that you can use for comparing and contrasting your two leads, but they're hamstrung by the limitations of budget, which is understandable to a certain degree, but I'm like, it's not... Do the Wonder Woman thing where he spins around. Like, yeah. It's not that hard, and it's not as ludicrous as, like, you know, cutting from Bill Bixby to Lou Ferrigno. That is actually cool when they do it for the time. So, and like, he's not even a god, which is also weird. He's just a Viking who got cast out.
So he's not a god in that. Okay.
Yeah, he was banished from Valhalla, and he's like compelled to serve Blake. He's Thor in name only in a lot of ways, which I find weird. Because also, like, including Thor in this is also an odd choice, because Thor has never been that popular. Even in the comics, like, he had a big run, but he's never been... Even characters like Hulk have been okay. And honestly, around the time, it made more sense to do Daredevil because of how popular he got with Frank Miller.
Well, that was the question I had for you guys, is a couple questions. A, you said Thor isn't popular, but who else from around this time could you have face David Banner, a.k.a. Hulk, in this? I can't think of anybody besides a big dude like Thor.
Well, as I mentioned, they found a way to do Daredevil, which we'll talk about next week.
Well, they did, but what I'm saying is he's not up to the size of Hulk, so they wanted...
Oh, you're talking about just like a drag-out fight?
Well, not just a drag-out fight, just somebody who's a match for him.
Well, I think if you're excluding Spider-Man, which sounds like was their option A, I think you could have done Captain America.
Okay.
It would have been ridiculous, because look at the Albert Pyun movie.
Yeah. But... And my other question was, are these two, and I know we'll talk about it in future movies, but are these two antagonistic to each other in comics as well? Because I don't remember that from reading the whole comics that I read.
Depends who writes it.
Okay.
Yeah, they when they seem to need a pop, they seem to find a way to always have them come together because they can both do whatever they're going to do and they don't have to worry about it. You know, they're not going to kill one another. Okay. It's, you know, the immovable force meeting the unstoppable object.
And it's also the thing, they're used more often to level the playing field without taking sides. Because you have in almost every run where, like Civil War is an example, where it's clearly Captain America versus Iron Man. I'm talking about the comics, not the movie.
Yeah.
Hulk is not really involved. And Thor, you think he's involved, but they reveal that it's a clone that Tony made. And then when Thor finds out, he comes back and just beats the fuck out of Iron Man, which is great. That's one of my favorite like Thor things ever. But they're never, because they're so out of place in Marvel, they sort of fall in the Doctor Strange camp where they're not really archetypical superheroes. You can use them more often just to be like obstacles. They're not quite mercenaries, but because they're not really involved, like Thor, why would he get involved in human affairs? That's also the weird thing with Thor. Hulk oftentimes is like, I want nothing to do with humanity because they're hunting me down. I mean, the obvious person they could have used, and I can't believe they didn't think of this, is Wolverine.
Well, how would you pull that off, though?
I think they could have done it.
Okay.
Just
now because wanders Hulk, to Canada?
Yeah, Wolverine makes his debut in Hulk comics. Before he was with the X-Men, his first appearance was fighting the Hulk. But yeah, it's just choosing Thor to me was odd. And I get what you're saying, like there weren't a lot of options, but...
Well, this whole backstory threw me off, though. And even I, who, like you guys, I'm not a Thor fan either. This character meant nothing to me throughout my younger years. And even when we get to Marvel proper, like the character just means nothing to me. So bringing him here was a bit of an odd choice. So if you're going to take one of these smaller characters and make them bigger, I guess the way to do that is to put them in the only other series that they had representing Marvel at the time, which was the Hulk. At the same time, the character just did nothing for me ever in comics or in live action.
I mean, the obvious answer also was the Punisher. I mean, they changed Thor enough. They could have just made the Punisher a straight-up villain.
Yeah, but Thor wasn't represented in, well, except for Avengers and Babysitting. No, Thor was not represented in media at the time. But I guess Punisher would come out the next year, huh? So, yeah, they could have done that.
I mean, look, Dolph Lundgren could certainly, you'd buy him holding his own against this Hulk.
For sure.
Although, Hulk would have to do is just run his fingers through his hair. And all that black that black dye would just come oozing out. So Blake shows up. He's a former student of Banner, and he tells him, yeah, I had this weird thing happen to me, much like you, and I need your advice on, like, severing myself with Thor, because he's annoyed that Thor is all moralistic and kind of a moron, which is how I like Thor to be depicted.
Me too.
I like that fish-out-of-water type of dynamic, which is why Brenna and company went the direction they did with that. But it's also weird seeing someone play Thor besides Chris Hemsworth.
It is. But I do have to ask you guys, too, Donald Blake, now, this is obviously an alter ego in the comics, but he's not a former student, I'm assuming, of Bannon.
So Blake is Thor's human identity.
He's
a construct that Odin made to sort of keep Thor depowered, because he gets his memory removed, and when he's banished to Earth, Blake is also crippled, and Thor has to, that's how he gets his humility back, how he's worthy, is he... is a doctor and he sympathizes with the sick and he becomes Thor. And then you realize, oh, Odin's an asshole, which is also very true with Norse mythology.
Yeah. So you go to the characterization, as I've already given away. I think this characterization, I laughed at him. I love when he's, as you mentioned, he's just a fucking himbo in this, but that's what I love about him. And this guy would go on. I mean, look, he didn't do much. He did a lot of TV. He was also a thug in True Romance. Like, he didn't go on to a huge career, but I find his fucking depiction and, like, the way he calls Banner a troll and all that, I find all this stuff to be fun.
I don't think Adam does.
I don't think he does either. He's turning red.
Or he's turning green.
Yeah.
Once Thor shows up, hey, he's fun, he's goofy, but he's not a serious character. Yeah, I mean, he's there to make Bill Bixby look serious. You know, you could tell that Bill Bixby might have second unit directed this or was the real director on it, because Thor's just, he's goofy. I'm not saying I don't enjoy him, but it's a goofy take to make Hulk look like the serious character.
Okay, so you've already gotten to where he summoned him and we got this quote-unquote fight going.
Yeah, on. So he basically eggs him on. Well, Thor shows up.
Yeah.
And he basically calls Banner a pussy, all things considered. And he gets Banner to turn into the Hulk. So he broke his streak after 2 years. And they have a fight that destroys the lab.
Yeah. And a lot of flexing, a lot of yelling. But I find this stuff fun. Like, even, like, Hulk throwing them. And this is fun for me. I'm having fun watching these two brutes just go at it. A lot like, you know, late 80s wrestling was. It's the same thing.
It's like, it's classic pit these two up against each other. But I'm watching The Incredible Hulk on TV 6 years after the show ended with a Thor that literally looks like The Adventures in Babysitting Thor. Like, he's dressed like a cosplay, like a bad Hardy 2000 cosplay. I mean, Mjolnir is the only decent thing that he's got hanging on. The helmet, the boots, it's a classic fight, and it looks like crap.
Now, I would agree with that, but I'm also going to say this. I think a lot of this, and I can't find any proof on this. I did try to do research on it, but there's not much about this movie out there. I have to assume that Bixby also had in line, and maybe even CBS, or no, this was NBC actually at this time, because at this point, Bixby couldn't get it sold at CBS, so he's like, fuck you, I'll just go to NBC then, which is where this TV movie aired. At this point, I think Bixby was trying to create another universe, and Adam, would you agree? This kind of feels like they're trying to do a spinoff here, right? Like, trying to launch a spinoff? Like,
yeah, I think he's pilot. Yep. Okay. I do think this is trying to build a new Marvel universe over here at WNBC.
Well, that's what they did with both of these movies, because they tried to start a Daredevil show with next week's.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that was the full plan. So they were trying to test the waters of, like, hey, we gotta start making money with these characters now that we have them. So the way you do that is getting them mainstream exposure. I just wish this fight looked like it didn't take place on a set. It looks like the 60s Star Trek sets, where if you lean on some of the exteriors, the cardboard fall over.
Well, I'll give it this, too. You know, this is 6 years after the Hulk was on TV, and not only do we have Bill Bixby coming back, we have Lou Ferrigno coming back as well. And Lou Ferrigno looks huge in this. He doesn't look like he's missed a step, and as we've noticed with certain people that you can't keep up that exercise regimen forever. But the fact that he did get in the shape that he did for this after 6 years of being away is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's like, unless you're him or Hugh Jackman. Because the fact that Jackman got back into Deadpool shape, Wolverine shape at like 55 is pretty damn impressive. More impressive than this. It looks like when Kirk and Gort fighting in the desert was better than this, you know you're in some trouble. And I love how he wakes up the next morning. It's like when you wake up after a bad hangover, after a night out drinking.
Very common in the show. This happened a lot.
Because you know what happens? He gets yelled at.
Yeah,
because he did something wrong that he doesn't remember. Because we get bitchy Banner here, which also makes him unlikable, because he's like, you set back my experiments.
Well, the lab's completely destroyed.
Yeah, but also he should be like, okay, help me out. And he's just still throwing a hissy fit. Like, I don't find Banner likable in either of these things that we've watched. And normally he leaves, because the show leaves the template, to my understanding, that he keeps moving from town to town because the Hulk. Hulk sightings, it's like Bigfoot, you gotta move, cover your tracks. But he's confident enough the transponder will work. And he tells Blake to talk to Thor and hug it out. And he should say, I'm going to take you to a psychologist or a marriage counselor so you two could work this out. Because he's not really qualified to handle that. I thought we were going to get Doc Samson.
No.
Who was a character I do know, even though it's someone who's not a big Hulk fan. And speaking of people who I had no idea were in this, we cut to Jack McGee.
Yeah. This.
God, this guy is the world's shittiest investigative reporter if he's been tracking this son of a bitch for 10 years and still hasn't found him.
And here's the thing, the most frustrating thing about this TV movie for me is the fact that we're not going to see him after this. I don't know if there were plans for him, because after this, he got pretty sick and he stopped acting a little after this. Jack Colvin, who plays McGee. But the fact that they don't give him a resolution fucking bugs the shit out of me. I wish there could have been something. Again, as you mentioned, Matt, he's been chasing this guy for how long? And he still hasn't caught up. What does that make him? They don't show anything to explain that. It's just kind of the same formula that we had 6 years before and 5 years of. Him chasing the Hulk and not catching up to him.
And that's all it is. I think he's here for just a level of continuity, and that's it. But it serves no purpose. Doesn't do anything.
Well, it takes away from Thor. Now he feels like you've introduced him to be like your new co-lead and you're having him share the spotlight with remnants of the show, which I get, but, and I know circumstances, you obviously can't predict someone dying prematurely, but I would be frustrated if now knowing there's no resolution with this reporter character.
So, yeah, we just talked about with the Scream series about the fact that in the 90s, tabloid journalism was a huge, huge part of Americana, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, including me. Tabloid journalism wasn't nearly that powerful at this point. So the fact that McGee is trying his best to expose this, even though he has no backing whatsoever, nobody believes him at this point, is frustrating as well. That the power of tabloid journalists is nowhere to be seen here.
And my understanding is he shows up a lot in the TV show, right?
Yeah, he shows up a lot. And again, I mentioned last week, but he eventually becomes a very sympathetic character. He's chasing him, but he has a bit of an arc that is really dwelled on. And then he kind of disappears throughout the course of the fourth season. But yeah, he is a pretty big part of the show. He's the antagonist that keeps following the Hulk around. Like, you don't want him to expose the Hulk, but he's at the cusp of doing it a lot of times. And then he just can't get that final vision and picture of him.
So to your point about him looking stupid, why does all of a sudden he go back to, oh, David's the Hulk's alter ego? I thought he deduced this at the end of the pilot.
Well, no, he didn't deduce the fact that it was David Banner. He thought
he had his assumption.
That's his assumption, exactly. And the whole crux of the series, again, you got to think about it, Matt. This is late 70s, early 80s television. It's all episodic. They're building and building and building, but yet you still want this character to not find out about him. So they just keep putting stumbling blocks along the way to make him doubt himself. And again, that's the exact place he is 5 years later, and that's frustrating. I'm with you. I'm very frustrated at this. Yeah.
Either he's a sucky journalist or David Banner has like Batman level of detective skills to keep throwing him off his scent.
Well, yeah, and David Banner is walking around with a stick with a bag on it, and yet he still can't fucking deduce.
He should be like, stupid. Gee, every town this guy goes to, the Hulk appears.
Yes.
He might as well say, I'll get you next time, Gadget. It's that level of cartoon logic. So he goes to Banyan's address, and I guess Banner does something smart by having Thor answer the door.
Great stuff. I found this so
funny. I think this is actually genuinely funny.
Yeah, I laugh pretty hard too. Adam, are you having any fun at this whatsoever? You sound very annoyed.
I'm trying to give this the benefit if it's a TV watch and all that, and after like a third of the way through, that's the respect I'm going to give it. I'm going to treat it like a TV show. So if I got to walk out of the room, I stopped hitting pause. Because it doesn't deserve my respect and my attention. This part here, when it's Thor, yeah, it's funny. Because this is the one note you always play with Thor. He's a man out of time. He's the fish out of water. Great. I've seen that played over and over. It's funny. But I got to say, I'm just irritated that I even got to sit through this.
So, much like the Brenna film, they go to a bar. And that's the bonding scene with Thor. And I do like he tells him, like, you ever thought about fighting crime? This. Which is also the weird thing with Thor when they have him fight like petty criminals that never make sense to me.
It's like
Superman where I'm like, you should be above.
Yeah. This whole thing of him going to the bar and the montage of him arm wrestling dudes and all this shit. Oh my God. This is when it's just like
fly.
Yeah. This is so stupid, but so funny.
Meanwhile, speaking of super friends, we should do the meanwhile, because we cut to a mercenary gang that is here to kidnap Banner and the transponder, but the Hulk takes them out. So apparently Banner went from the bar, got blackout drunk and changed it to the Hulk to come back and beat the shit out of these mercenaries.
Okay, so up until this point, I'm having a pretty decent time with this, given what it is, and just kind of sinking in and not really in, well, yeah, I was kind of enjoying this at this point. When these guys come in and when the hitmen come in and we have these contracts and we have Charles Napier going, I guarantee all this stuff I fucking hate. It's here to elongate the film and it drags it down.
I don't know what these bad guys want. I don't know what they're here for. I don't know who they are. And every time they show back up, it just confuses what's already a muddy show/movie.
Well, when Charles Napier showed up, I thought he was playing his CIA guy from Rambo 2.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. He was a pretty big guest star on the TV show. He showed up at least 3 times throughout the course of the show.
As this character?
No, as different characters. That's what you did in TV back then, was you just recast them.
Now, he was also here because after Ted Cassidy died, he voiced the Hulk in the show. He did the vocal effects, so maybe that's also why he always agreed to come onto the show. But yeah, he's Mike Fooch, who's like the leader of this mercenary group, because the Hulk doesn't have an extensive villain gallery, so they're just making up generic hitmen, sort of like what the first two Punisher movies did. And I'll say it's also the problem with Marvel in general, and one of the reasons why I prefer DC, is that outside of Spider-Man, none of the heroes themselves have what I would call great rogues galleries. The exception is the X-Men, but that's a group, and that's kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
But outside of Spider-Man, who does have a great villain collection, like Captain America, it's Red Skull and Nazis. Basically, that's it. Iron Man, you've got a couple. And the Hulk, you've got a couple. And Daredevil became popular by fighting a Spider-Man villain, which we'll talk about next week, ironically. But to get back on track, because we have to stretch this out, because this movie is only 100 minutes, and there is no plot.
None. We have fights, and then we have montages, and then we have Hitman meeting at fucking racquetball.
Yeah, we get racquetball, you get the mercenaries who disguise themselves as cops.
Yeah.
And Shaw is only here to get kidnapped.
Yep.
It's the only reason she's in this movie. And she gets kidnapped despite Thor and Hulk both being there.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that one of the corporate sleazeballs has been working as the mercenary's mole because he's going after his older brother.
Yeah. Again, you bring these assholes in, I'm tuned out like you guys.
Speaking of tuned out, they demand the transponder as a ransom for Shaw. Which is also weird because it's like, okay, Hulk and Thor fought, but the transponder was not destroyed completely.
Yeah, that was weird. I thought maybe that fight destroyed that, and that's why he couldn't get this cure. But yeah, apparently the transponder survived that whole fight.
Yeah, and the whole
thing. Vibranium.
Yeah, and the whole thing that Blake could be, you know, you're a former student, help me rebuild it, and we'll be even. Because, again, this is the thing, the military only looks at this thing as a weapon. So Banner willingly removes his best chance at a cure. But again, I have the issue of you've been able to hold the Hulk in check. So clearly this is not your no-win scenario.
And the weird thing about this is it's playing off a lot of, as kids, I felt like I was the nerd and I wanted to be the big Hulk, you know, and take out all my frustrations. And that's what this show has always played upon. And here we have it times three, because we have this Donald Blake character who also, he doesn't turn into Thor, but he can summon him. And how cool would it be to have like this, a big dude like this, if you're being bullied, to beat up the bullies. So I like the cathartic nature of these two big, big dudes as superheroes fighting it out and whatnot. But when you mix in these plots, Matt, as you're describing, it just turns into something that I just don't want.
That's also the lazy thing of every versus thing in a superhero context ends with them teaming up to fight a bigger threat. And this one falls into that, but the problem is I don't buy the military being able to fight Hulk and Thor together.
I was going
to
say, is it a bigger threat?
This show.
Is it a bigger threat?
It tries to be, yeah. but it's still the team-up aspect, which, yeah, you know, Batman v Superman does that. Basically, every comic they've done.
Yeah.
Hell, every versus, like Godzilla and King Kong, Frankenstein and the Wolfman, they all end with a team-up at the end of the day. So it's a problem with, in the same way that a lot of Stanley's writing was filled with cliches and tropes, so were these versus movies, which is why I hate them almost every time. Except for Freddy versus Jason, that's the outlier.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That movie's stupid and it knows it. Look, this is not as bad as Alien vs. Predator or anything like that, but it's, I cannot like recommend it. The guy who got shot tells him that Shaw is being held at this facility, so they bring Blake along, even though he's useless.
Yeah, why he's along, I have no idea.
And the problem is also, like, they never say, okay, can Thor only operate, like, within proximity of Blake? Like, what's there? Like, do they have to be together for his powers to work? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he can summon him, but where does he go from there?
So Blake and Banner believe that Shaw has figured out he's the Hulk, and we get our big drag-out fight, although it's more ho-hum than anything.
Oh, I find some of this stuff fun, even though at one point Hulk just takes a pipe and he wraps the main bad guy. It's like, come on, that's how you're going to end it? You're going to wrap this pipe around the guy and hang him? That was a little weird, but I had some fun with the end battle here and some of the lines that Thor was saying. You know, again, every time he says troll, I have a smile on my face. I find this
him stuff calling Hulk troll is like a highlight,
mm-hmm,
because he never stops calling them trolls.
It's, yeah.
There's something funny about that. But I need an action scene here to feel different than something I would have seen in Miami Vice. This is such a standard. This could have been clipped from 100 other shows.
Yeah, the big problem is you have a versus movie on a TV budget. I guess you have to add people like this and people for these two to fight and team up and fight. But to Matt's point, is it really a huge threat and necessary to have both these fucking big dudes, one of them supposedly a god, fighting these guys? No, not really.
And they've also never established, like, what are Thor's weaknesses?
Yeah. Does he have a weakness? I'm not a Thor fan. Does he have a weakness?
Getting good movies. That's his
But suddenly the Hulk can get shot in this movie. That made no sense to me. You know, I mean, he gets shot, and I'm like, his skin doesn't take a bullet shot. So I don't know. This thing's all over the place.
Yeah, and you can at least explain it with one line. He hasn't been the Hulk for so long, so, like, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. He's more vulnerable. But the movie ends, I say movie in quotes, where Thor and Blake, you know, say their goodbyes to Banner and go off to pilot land that will never see the light of day.
Well, funny. We talked about her in the beginning. We talked about her a little bit in the middle, but Maggie Shaw's here too. And the weirdest part of this movie for me was seeing her with that dog and her just kind of looking out saying, oh, there he goes. Okay.
Yeah, like, making he's like, I can't be with you. Bye.
Yeah. And she makes no effort to, like, stop him or talk him into maybe staying. Oh no, she's just gonna stand there and say okay, goodbye, as the dog stands there and freaking yelps. It's really weird that this is the way this relationship ends.
Does he do this to every woman in the show?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. He does it to them without them seeing him. Here, this chick actually sees him walking away and doesn't do a goddamn thing to stop him.
She was enjoying the theme playing. She was just like, ooh, I like the music.
Right.
So he tells her that I need to go and once again leave to find a cure. I'm sure that's going to happen at some point.
I like the goodbyes between Thor and Banner. Again, every time Thor's talking, it just makes me laugh. If this was supposed to launch a spinoff, I think it was a good way of at least leaving somebody like me, who at this point was 10, 11 years old, wanting more of Thor in a future episode or TV movie or show that he was supposed
Damn,
to.
Damn, and you know, this is the perfect example. Nancy Reagan had it right. Just say no. They keep offering you this, you could say no. So someone tells me you're going to be the most forgiving of the three of us. So
yeah, Adam.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give The Incredible Hulk Returns?
Okay, I freely admitted last week that a lot of my love for this TV show, for this character, stems from that N-word that people tend to hide behind a lot, nostalgia. And with that nostalgia in mind, I cannot look at this and say, God, this is a great movie. It's not. But I can look at this and say, you know what? Until these two knuckleheads get involved and we have this hitman plot going, I was having a pretty decent time with it. I find this Thor to be just hilarious in the outright doofusness and himboness that he is. And as Matt said, the more himbo that Thor is, the more I like him. But that being said, once the plot kicks in and everything's established, my main issue with this movie is nothing is resolved here that was not resolved during a TV show. If you're going to do a TV movie based on this show that had 4 years running, 6 years after it had already aired, you have to have resolution, and there is zero resolution. What this ends up being is a two-hour, including commercials, two-hour episode of that TV show, and that is not fulfilling. With that in mind, I have to go low on this. I'm going to go ahead and give it, you know what, for Thor purposes, I'll give it a 5. I think there's enough to kind of enjoy what's going on, but if you're expecting resolution, you're not going to get it. It's kind of a lower tier Hulk movie that really solves nothing that it says that it will solve. So 5 out of 10 for The Incredible Hulk Returns.
Himbo, more like him no in my case. Adam, what about you?
Boy. Okay, so for a movie that's called The Incredible Hulk Returns, the thing to enjoy in this is watching Thor. Now, I just mean Thor, not David Blake, because that kid's annoying as all shit. And I don't know how that relationship worked with Banner as a student, because some of that doesn't line up, and I don't feel that he's smart whatsoever. But the inclusion of Thor is done at a disservice to The Incredible Hulk returning to TV, because it takes away the impetus from it. I don't know what the bad guys want in this. I'm told they want something. I don't get it. I don't like the action scenes where humans are involved. Thor and Hulk punching each other. It looks crappy, but it's fun to watch two superheroes punchy, punchy, fighty, fighty. Okay? It's Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. It's WrestleMania. That's kind of what you're showing up for. But the rest of the show's not good. It's not written well. It doesn't look well. David Bruce Banner is fucking mopey for 2 hours. And I know that's part of the character, but he's not enjoying himself, so I don't enjoy that character at all. Look, Thor's a fish out of water. That's funny. It's funny then, it's funny now, it'll be funny tomorrow, but that's kind of the only note they have to play. Man, I don't know why this movie existed, because if you were just trying to reboot the show, you did not do the Hulk any favors. If you were trying to reboot a Thor show, then that's what this was for. Then call it Incredible Hulk Team Up, you know, do Marvel Team Up, just something else. This thing, man, I was bored, I was angry, I was bored again. There's a few moments to chuckle, but this was not worth 90 minutes of my time, and I kind of resent doing it for that reason. Giving it a 4, I'm being generous at that. I'm giving it a 4 for Thor, and outside of that movie or that part, don't waste your time.
I have a feeling that's not the only 4 he's going to be giving a Thor movie as we get further into this retrospective.
No, that'll be the high watermark for some of them.
Just wait. We'll get to Ragnarok eventually.
Well, to your last point, to quote another TV show that got the big screen treatment, Resistance is futile, because I feel like this thing was made by Loki as a hit piece on his brother, because holy crap, if this was their way to try to garner excitement for a Thor pilot, fail. I give you A for effort, F for no fucking way. So, and then as a Hulk return, you're returning to the same stuff we saw. There's been no arc, there's been no change, and the hiatus was longer than the show ran. So I think this is, fail is the correct word. I'll say it. I felt like I wasted my time with this, because I for something that was at least getting me back by providing something new. So much of this is more of the same, and I say that as someone who's never watched the show outside of the pilot, so it doesn't feel like an evolution at all. If anything, you could have told me this was like season 2, and I would be like, okay. And so I'm with Adam. It's a 4. I feel like I was stranded in Norse waters myself because I'm numb, but I also can't bring myself to cry foul because I'm not a huge Thor fan, or a Hulk fan for that matter. So maybe I'm more forgiving in that regard. But that makes next week's show very interesting, because I'm a huge Daredevil fan.
Yeah, and you know what? To close the book on this one, all things considered, we're not too far off. I mean, we're only one score apart. So even though I found a little more enjoyment than you guys, I do feel that we were kind of on the same wavelength here.
Yep, and the wavelength leads us to the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which came out 1 year later. And this one, Bill Bixby is in the director's chair for. And we're getting Daredevil and Kingpin next week. So, Adam, does that move your needle whatsoever? Or are you more like, oh, God, they're going to bastardize these characters too?
I think they're going to bastardize them. But I am actually a little excited. I did not know they were in it until this ended. And I left my player that I was watching it on going. And it was like, would you like to start Trial of the Incredible Hulk? And it showed Daredevil. And I did not know Daredevil was in it. And it showed what I presume is the suit. I'm going to be really pissed if what they showed me isn't accurate. But I got to say, I got excited. And it's not because of the Hulk. It's because of Daredevil. And they called him Matt Murdock. So we'll see what happens. But I'm definitely more excited about this one. And I think maybe having Bixby in charge might end up being a note in its favor.
Okay, as far as I'm concerned.
I was about to talk shit about Ben Affleck, but we could save that for later.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, as much as I was into this at the time, I have to say that by the next year, I was a big grown-up 12 years old, and I felt like I had outgrown The Incredible Hulk. So I did not tune in for next week's film in its initial run. I saw it many years later, but I did not watch it initially. The only reason I watched the movie a couple weeks from now is because of the D word that they put to get people to watch those things, which is the death of The Incredible Hulk. But the Trial of The Incredible Hulk, I could have given two shits about. So I've only seen next week's movie one time, and I don't recall being too impressed by it. So I'm not really looking forward to next week's show.
Now let's remember, at 12 years old, Garrett was already taller than Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, and I think whoever directed the last movie was blind. So I guess it's appropriate that Daredevil is showing up next. And the title at least is befitting of bringing Daredevil in, because he's a lawyer. Assuming that it's going to be a legal procedural thriller, because, yeah, the Hulk should be put on trial for property damage and vandalism at minimum. So if you're going to go that route, bringing Daredevil in makes all the sense in the world, because as we'll talk about, Daredevil became much more prominent in the comics than he was under Stan Lee, thanks to Frank Miller. So we have an instance where Frank Miller actually did some good for comics for once. So until next week when we review the trial of the Incredible Hulk, Don, this time you're going to help wipe up the podcast that you spilled. Thank you, gentlemen.
That I'm dead. But they also think that this creature inside of me is a murderer, and they may someday be right. It's not human. Maybe it's what we were before we became human. Maybe it's the worst in us.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Do you really believe that I am separate from you?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
My mother always used to tell me getting angry doesn't help.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I feel somehow we're alike.
I guess we could all learn something from the big goof.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I made a stink bomb once. Cleared out the whole school. What a wonderful fiasco. The whole school.
My friends kept my secret, but forevermore they called me Stinky. Stinky!
Scheduling done by Matt.
Look at him. He lives for every second. To hell with tomorrow. Not a worry in the world. The worry he leaves to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What is it that you pound on my door with such insolence?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Security ought to be beefed up a lot more. In a place like this, you can't be too careful.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Are you ready?
The The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Where will you go?
The city.
That's not a good place. People get lost in that city.
You have to stop someplace.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production, copyright 2026, and any and all sound clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Take my secret with you.
And I leave mine with you. I have a brother in the world now.
Yes, you do.
My hand is in front
of me. I know.
You can leave us now.
Like I said, Walt Simon's in with Thor, which we'll get into with Dark World. I did read Lady Thor. I think that was that Jason Aaron?
Yes.
We'll talk about that with Love and Thunder. Those are the two things with Thor I've really liked. And honestly, it's weird how, while I don't give a shit about Thor, I like Loki a lot in things that he's been involved in, because he's also been able to operate sort of independent of Thor, even though they're intrinsically linked. But
again, why isn't he married? Like, there's just nothing different about this character, and that pisses me off.
Adam's being very quiet.
This thing starts.
Now, and they do that a lot. Like, that's the whole crux of the Avengers. He's in hiding. And he only gets involved because S.H.I.E.L.D. tracks him down. But in that movie, I think they only say, and we'll talk about it in 10 years, Adam, don't they say he's been the Banner for only like a year, not 2 years?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And that also makes sense because the Ed Norton movie ends with him seemingly controlling it.
Yep.
Although we find out that's bullshit, but we'll talk about that in several years. But yeah, it's...
I'm just irritated that I even got to sit through this.
It's also the thing of, like, I just saw this in Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. Year before.
Speaking of Dolph Lundgren, God, we're going to have to do, like, Universal Soldier.
Just to complete the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't done Rocky IV yet.
No.
So. If you're going to go that route, bringing Daredevil in makes all the sense in the world. Because, as we'll talk about, Daredevil became much more prominent in the comics than he was under Stan Lee, thanks to Frank Miller. So we have an instance where Frank Miller actually did some good for comics for once. The problem is I don't have a line to conclude this shit.
You didn't get a line? God damn it, Matt.
There's no memorable dialogue in this fucking thing.
Hulk smash, maybe? I don't know. What can you say?
I'm pulling out my notes.
Okay.
Odin!
The best woodwork in the world.
Podcast!
I also love how when you... the poster for this on IMDb...
Oh, it's so funny.
It's nowhere... Like, The Return of the Incredible Hulk, which I referenced, that was the title for a two-part episode.
which confused me when I was looking it up.
Yeah, my dumbass almost watched that.
Oh, y'all would be reviewing these last three by yourself if I would have sat through it.
There's some quotes on the IMDb page, Matt.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Okay.
What? So until next week when we review the trial of the Incredible Hulk, Don, this time you're going to help wipe up the podcast that you spilled. Thank you, gentlemen.